The CEM Network is pleased to present Ronald L. Dart and Born to Win. Would it shock you to learn that during the time when the New Testament was being written, during the whole first century, all the way up to around 80 or 90 AD, would it surprise you to learn that the entire Christian church throughout the entire known world observed the Sabbath day? No, I don't mean Sunday. I mean what most people would call the Jewish Sabbath, Saturday. I mean the fourth commandment. And would it surprise you further to learn that for over 400 years, the great majority of Christian churches still observed the Sabbath day, and that 1,000 years later, the Roman church was still trying to inhibit Sabbath day observance among a substantial number of Christians of that century? Actually, as late as the 80s and 90s of the first century, when the last epistles of the New Testament were being written, the New Testament church universally observed the seventh-day Sabbath. This part is beyond dispute. This is not a matter of a few proof texts and some technical arguments. It is something that is woven into the very fabric of the New Testament. Now, to explain what I mean by this, I'll have to start with some common ground, with something that everyone will agree on. There's an event recorded by Luke that opens the door on this question. It's found in the fourth chapter in verse 16, where Jesus came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. Now, apart from the discussion that this was Jesus' custom, a part of his ethos, the way he lived his life, I want at the moment to look at the question of the Jews who were sitting there who heard him when he stood up to read. I don't know of anyone who would doubt for a moment that the seventh-day Sabbath was the universally recognized day of rest and worship among all Jews when Christ came on the scene. So it was Jesus' custom, his ethos, to use the Greek word for it, to attend synagogue on the Jewish Sabbath, and that Sabbath was, week by week, the day we call Saturday. Now here's my first question. How did the Jews in the synagogue on that day view the Sabbath? What was the status of the Sabbath day in their faith and their practice? What place did it hold in their life? Well, the first aspect of it was, of course, the fourth commandment, which you find in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8. It's simple enough. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The word holy means separate and apart. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, not even your cattle, nor the stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and the Lord rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and hallowed it. But for the Jew in the synagogue on the day when Jesus taught there, the Sabbath was rather more than just one of the Ten Commandments. The Sabbath day was the very core of their identity as a people. There's a passage back in Exodus 31 that illustrates this, and I think it's sometimes overlooked. And remember, what we're trying to grasp at the moment is the attitude of the Jew in the synagogue the day Jesus walked in there for the first time toward the Sabbath day. How did he feel about it? Well, Exodus 31 and verse 12, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying this, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, verily, my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am Jehovah that does sanctify you. Now think about that. This is not merely a sign of the Jews. This was a sign that identified who their God was by name. For a Jew to change the Sabbath was to change his God. Do you get that? It was a sign, he says, between me and you throughout all your generations that you may know something. It is that I am Jehovah that does sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, God said, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. That's an important statement. Understand this. You're cut off from the people of God by not keeping the Sabbath day. It's the identifying sign. It's who we are. It's who God is. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. So the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. The Sabbath is not going to go away for these people. It is a sign, God said, between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So you would fully expect that any Jew in Jesus' day who came to the synagogue on the Sabbath day has no thought that at some time in the future the Sabbath day would go away for him, right? For him, it's a perpetual covenant. For him, it's something that's going to last forever. The thought of the Sabbath passing as some kind of doctrinal change would have been anathema to them. The Sabbath was the sign for the Jew that identified who his God was. And it carried the penalty of death for a presumptuous violation of it. Now, for the Jews to whom Jesus spoke on this occasion, the Sabbath could not be taken lightly. Because the Jews knew, beyond what we've said already, the Jews knew from Ezekiel's prophecies that the failure to keep the Sabbath as a sign was a direct reason why they had gone into exile in Babylon. There's a fascinating prophecy. It's found in the 20th chapter of the book of Ezekiel. And God begins to run down this statement with Israel, warning them about where they are and where they have come to. He says, "Thus saith the Lord God, when I chose Israel, I lifted up my hand to the seed of the house of Jacob and made myself known to them in the land of Egypt." This lifting up of God's hand is a form of swearing. He said, "I lifted up my hand saying, I am Jehovah your God." In other words, I identified myself to them by name. Verse 7, "Then I said to them, cast away every man the abomination of his eyes. Don't defile yourselves with the idols of Egypt. I am Jehovah your God. But they rebelled against me. They wouldn't listen to me, and they didn't cast away their idols." There's a repeated theme in this passage. Again and again, God was angry with Israel, but he decided to work for them for his own reputation. He says in verse 9, "But I worked for my name's sake, that my name would not be polluted among the heathen." In other words, God was mad with them. He was going to punish them, but there were certain things God said, "I have to do so that my reputation won't suffer in the process." So God says in verse 10, "I caused them to go out of the land of Egypt. I brought them to the wilderness. I gave them my statutes. I showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he'll live in them. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am Jehovah that does sanctify them." Once again, the purpose of the Sabbath is to identify who their God was. But, he says in verse 13, "The house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They walked not in my statutes. They despised my judgments, which if a man do, he will live in them. My Sabbaths they greatly polluted. Then I said, I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them." He says, "I'll just get rid of these people. They're out in the wilderness now." But then he says, the same theme comes back. He says, "No, but I worked for my name's sake, that it should not be polluted before the heathen." God's reputation was at stake. Verse 18, "But I said to the children in the wilderness, don't walk in the statutes of your fathers. Don't do what they did. Don't observe their judgments. Don't defile yourself with their idols. I am Jehovah your God. Walk in my statutes, keep my judgments and do them, and hallow my Sabbaths. They, that is my Sabbaths, will be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am Jehovah your God." How clear does this have to be? Later, he will say in verse 23, "I lifted up my hand to them in the wilderness that I would scatter them among the heathen and disperse them through the countries." Why would I do that? "Because they had not executed my judgments, had despised my statutes, polluted my Sabbaths, and their eyes were after their father's idols." In the end, the Jews went into captivity in Babylon for a broad variety of transgressions, but the number one reason that led to all the others was that they polluted the Sabbath day. So, by the time Jesus showed up in the synagogue to read the scriptures on that day, the Sabbath had been drilled into the conscience of the Jews assembled there. It was woven into the warp and woof of their faith. It was not a mere doctrine that could be abandoned if it became inconvenient. So I think we can understand at this point in history, when Jesus walked into the synagogue, the Jews who sat there that day and heard him read, to abandon the Sabbath day, to contemplate a change in the Sabbath day of any kind, would have been tantamount to abandoning their God. Keep that in mind, and we'll talk further when I come back after this important message.
What is the real difference between the Old Covenant and the New? Is it really a change in the law, or is it merely a change in administration? Write or call for a free cassette tape titled The Covenant Inside. Write to Born to Win, Post Office Box 560, White House, Texas 75791. Or call toll-free 1-888-BIBLE-44. And please tell us the call letters of this radio station.
So the commitment to the Jews that when Jesus went to the synagogue and taught there, their commitment to the Sabbath day was absolute and permanent. This is one thing that they had gotten clear in their history, and they would never have contemplated a change or an abandonment of the Sabbath day. And there was also no question in their mind about which day it was. All this was nailed down to them right from the very start, before they ever got to Mount Sinai, before they ever got the fourth commandment. They were taught the lesson with manna. You'll find the whole story in the 16th chapter of Exodus. I won't bother you with it here, but it's an occasion where God gave them manna from heaven 6 days, and they were allowed to go out and gather manna each day, what they needed to eat that day. And as a matter of discipline, God did not allow them to collect more than a day's worth at a time. If they tried to keep it over to the next day, it bred worms and stank. But they were commanded on the 6th day to gather twice as much manna and to keep it over, which they did, and it didn't breed worms and stink. So they were established in their mind, okay, I got the picture now. The Sabbath is this day and not some other day. Some fools didn't bother collecting extra on Friday. They went out on the Sabbath to find it, and there was none there. The lesson was driven home for every Jew. So when Jesus walked on the scene, the 7th day Sabbath, that is the 7th day Sabbath, not just any Sabbath, was an established and honored tradition in every sect of Judaism. Now this in itself is interesting, because while the Jews may have been divided on many issues, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Essenes saw differently on many things, but not on the question of the Sabbath day. Because the observance of the Sabbath, on the day appointed by God himself, was the identifying sign that they were worshiping Jehovah and not somebody else. Now that brings us to the important question then of Jesus' own attitude toward the Sabbath day. It was, as he grew up, a part of his ethos. It was his custom. He observed the 7th day Sabbath right along with these Jews. He attended synagogue, as his custom was. Now after his baptism, and after his 40-day fast and his temptation by the devil, he was ready to begin his ministry. What was the first thing he did? Where did he do it? And on what day did he do it? The story is in Luke 4 and verse 14. Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit to Galilee, and there went out a fame of him throughout all the region round about. He taught in their synagogues, being glorified of all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. And there was delivered to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, and he began to read. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, the recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And he closed the book, gave it back to the minister, and sat down. And the eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began to say to them, "This day is this scripture fulfilled in your ears." And what day was that? It was the Sabbath day, of course. It was a part of Jesus' ethos, his way of living, to attend synagogue on the Sabbath day. And it was on the Sabbath day, he said, that Isaiah's prophecy was fulfilled as he began seriously his ministry. Now let's pause and think about this for a moment. Was it Jesus' intent to change the day of worship for the people of God in years to come? If it was, he knew it right here when he did and said these things. Was it his intent to change the fourth commandment or to abolish the fourth commandment that we should remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy? Was it his intent to switch the day of rest and worship from the seventh day to the first day? Now, if so, what would have been the consequences of that change? Well, first, it would have been necessary to clearly and definitively to have announced the change and to give a reason for it at some point in time. Mind you, we're talking about Jews here. We are talking about people for whom the Sabbath day was central. It was heart. It was core of their religion, their faith. It was what actually identified their faith. It was the identifying sign of their faith. It was the identifying sign of who their God was. If you're going to change that, somewhere along the line, you ought to explain it, don't you think? Remember that any Jew, to any Jew, changing the Sabbath was tantamount to changing gods. This is no mere doctrinal issue. It is not the equivalent of a Catholic becoming a Protestant or vice versa. It's the equivalent of a Christian becoming a Buddhist. If it was Jesus' intent to change the Sabbath to Sunday, there would have to also be a point in time when the change would take place. So somehow, there would need to be a recognition that the change had been made, why it was made, when it was to be made, so that people would not think that Jesus was starting an entirely new religion with a new God. This isn't the sort of thing you sort of slide into gradually. Now, bear in mind that for years after the ascension of Christ, the church was composed entirely of Jews and proselytes. There was no wholesale conversion of Gentiles until Paul and Barnabas went on their first missionary journey, and that's recorded in the 13th chapter of Acts. Now, you can search through the four Gospels and all the way up through Acts 12, and you will not find one word about a controversy over the Sabbath. You will find no announcement of a change. You will find no suggestion of a change, no explanation of a change, nor will you find the great turmoil that would have been generated by any suggestion of a change in the day of worship. The assumption is so clear, it's unmistakable, that up through the fourth chapter, all Christians, who were Jews anyway, continued to observe the Sabbath as they had all their lives. There is no way that change could have been made and not have created an uproar in the New Testament. You will find no instructions for a change in the day of worship, nor even any breadcrumbs to indicate that such a change was made. This is important because a change in the day of worship would not have merely implied a change in custom. For every Jew and every proselyte, it would have implied a change of God, and this change would have to be dealt with in depth. Now, you tell me, could such a change have been made up to Acts 13 without a ripple of it showing up in the Bible? But now, the gospel is going to the Gentiles. Did a change take place at that time? That brings us to the 13th chapter of Acts, where this first major effort toward the Gentiles was made. When I come back after this short message, we'll look at how Paul handled this matter.
For a free cassette tape of this radio program that you can share with friends and others, write or call This Week Only, and request the program titled Christian Holidays, number 21. Write to Born to Win, Post Office Box 560, White House, Texas 75791. Or call toll free 1-888-BIBLE-44 and tell us the call letters of this station.
So here we are in the 13th chapter of Acts, where the gospel finally goes out to the Gentiles for the first time. How did Paul handle the issue or the question of the Sabbath day? A question that, as far as we can tell in the New Testament, had never been raised up until this point. In Acts 13, verse 14, he says, "We departed from Perga and came to Antioch in Pisidia, and went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and sat down. And after the reading of the law and the prophets, the rulers of the synagogue sent to them and said, 'You men and brethren, if you have any word of exhortation for the people, say on.' So Paul stood up, gesturing with his hand, said, 'Men of Israel and you that fear God, give audience.'" Okay, so the gospel had to go to the Jew first, and naturally it went on the Sabbath, right? Then follows Paul's gospel to the Jews. You can read it for yourself right there in the 13th chapter of Acts. And you will find not a word about a change in the Sabbath. Well, naturally, what would have been the effect of such a change? Well, it would have certainly grabbed Paul by the scruff of the neck and thrown him out in the street, because that would have been tantamount to abandoning God completely in the eyes of a Jewish synagogue. Now, when the Jews had gone out of the synagogue, verse 42, the Gentiles besought that these words might be preached to them the next Sabbath. Now, when the congregation was broken up, many of the Jews and religious proselytes followed Paul and Barnabas, who, speaking to them, persuaded them to continue in the grace of God. So the gospel of grace has been thoroughly established. And the next Sabbath day came almost the whole city together to hear the word of God. But when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with envy and spoke against those things spoken by Paul, contradicting and blaspheming. But nothing had bothered them about Paul until he was successful. And the fact is, when are they doing all this preaching? They're still doing it on the Sabbath day. Because, you see, the identity of God is established in connection with the seventh-day Sabbath. It's a sign of who He is. They didn't change that. It wasn't a change in the day of worship and assembly that infuriated the Jews, because they were still meeting on the Sabbath day. There was no change. Later, in the 17th chapter of Acts, when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. And Paul, as his ethos was, his custom, his manner, went into them and 3 Sabbath days reasoned with them out of the Scriptures, opening and alleging that Christ must needs have suffered and risen from the dead, and that this Jesus whom I preach to you is Christ. Mind you, it was Paul's way of life at this late date to keep the Sabbath, to go to the synagogue. It's the same word that Jesus used for his custom when he said his ethos was to go to the synagogue on the Sabbath day. In the early years of the Christian faith, in all the years that are recorded in the pages of the New Testament, the Christian church looked to the outside world to be nothing more than another Jewish sect. Do you know why? Because they continued to observe the Jewish Sabbath day. It's as simple as that. They not only observed the same Sabbath as the Jews, they observed the same holidays. In Acts 20, verse 4, Paul takes off into Asia with several companions. And it says Acts 20, verse 5, went ahead of us and waited at Troas. And we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to Troas in 5 days and abode 7 days. It's just a throwaway line, but they were planning their travel according to the Jewish calendar. They wanted to stay in a location until the holidays were finished and then move on. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, Paul writing to these people about a problem in the church, he said in verse 7, "Purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened. For Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." I know this will be shocking to some people, but it's right there on the page. Paul is exhorting a Gentile church to observe the feast of unleavened bread. It was done commonly at this time. Then there's another interesting little letter of Paul's, Colossians, in chapter 2, verse 16. He told them, he says, "Therefore do not let anyone condemn you in matters of food and drink, or of observing festivals, new moons, or Sabbaths." Now these are only a shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. "Don't let anyone disqualify you, insisting on self-abasement and worship of angels, dwelling on visions puffed up without cause by a human way of thinking." Now if you parse this passage very carefully, what you see is a church that is observing the festivals, new moons, and Sabbaths, but is being condemned for feasting on food and drink by Gentile ascetics that were common in that time. It is truly ironic that this is a popular piece that is used as a proof text against the observance of the festivals, when in actual fact, it reveals plainly that the church was observing festivals, new moons, and Sabbath days. But doesn't John mention Sunday as the Lord's Day in Revelation? Actually, no, he doesn't. Here is what John says. Revelation 1, verse 9. I, John, who am also your brother and companion in tribulation, was in the Isle of Patmos for the word of God and for the testimony of Jesus Christ. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a great voice as of a trumpet. You realize there is not one word here to suggest that the Lord's day is Sunday? If indeed John is referring at all to a day of the week, and if we are to use the Bible as our best historical source, you have Luke 6, verse 1. It came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first that Jesus went through the cornfields. His disciples plucked the ears of corn and ate them, rubbing them in their hands. Now the Pharisees saw this, and they jumped on them about it, saying, "Why are you doing that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath days?" Now, there's nothing at all in the Bible to tell, the Old Testament, to tell you can't do what Jesus and his disciples were doing. And Jesus said, "Haven't you read so much as this, what David did when he himself was hungry and they that were with him? How he went into the house of God and took and ate the showbread and gave it to them which were with him, which is not lawful to eat but for the priests alone?" And he said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath." Now, here's my question. Why would anyone assume that Sunday is the Lord's Day when Jesus said plainly that he was Lord of the Sabbath? I think it's clear enough that in the apostolic era of the church, there was one Sunday in the year that was observed, and that was the day that Jesus first appeared to his disciples after his resurrection, the day the first fruits were offered. Otherwise, the church, being at first composed of good Jews and later of many Gentiles, continued to observe the Sabbath and the festivals. So how did it get lost? How and when did the change take place? That is really a fascinating story, but one that will have to wait until the next program. Until then, this is Ronald Dart. And don't forget, you were born to win.
You have heard Ronald L. Dart. If you would like more information, or if you have any questions, write to Born to Win, Post Office Box 560, White House, Texas 75791. In the U.S. and Canada, call toll-free 1-888-BIBLE-44 and visit our website at www.cemnetwork.com.